As the war in Syria drags into its third year, a growing number of Takfiri and Salafist extremists affiliated to al-Qaeda are making their way into the ranks of militants fighting Bashar al-Assad. The Secretary General of Hezbollah says these extremists are killing Shias, Sunnis, Christians and others in Iraq, Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen and elsewhere. Observers say the policy of support for insurgents in Syria is only giving extremists a stronger foothold and making their threat to the region and the world even more serious, like what happened in London where a serving soldier was butchered to death. I'm Homa Lezgi and you're watching The Debate.
The battle between Syrian government troops and foreign-backed insurgents over the strategic city of Qusair continues for 8th straight day. Reports say Syrian government forces, supported by Hezbollah fighters, now control 80% of the city. The Syrian army launched its offensive there to push out the al-Qaeda-linked al-Nusra Front and other militants. In a recent speech, the leader of the Lebanese resistance movement defended Hezbollah's intervention in the battle for Qusair. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said, if the insurgents win the war in Syria, it will turn their weapons against Lebanon. Nasrallah said, extremist groups, including Salafists and Takfiris, formed the backbone of the insurgency in Syria. He warned that the fall of the Syrian government would give rise to extremists and plunge the Middle East into a dark period. Takfiris are notorious extremists who are responsible for spreading deadly violence across the Muslim world, from Afghanistan through Pakistan to Iraq, Yemen, Somalia, and now to Syria. They're responsible for numerous terrorist attacks that left both Sunnis and Shias killed in the Muslim countries. Despite all the crimes committed by these extremist groups, the West continues to support them in their fight against the Syrian government. There are rising voices criticizing the West for the double standard in dealing with the issue of terrorism. Many rights activists say the recent butchery of a policeman by extremists in London is exactly what the Western governments are paying the same kind of people to do in Syria.
The absolute double standards of the British government is astonishing. They are prepared to arm, provide the machetes to the Salafist or al-Qaeda elements, Saudi-backed elements, who are in Syria, seeking to destabilize the government of Syria, whilst they are condemning the same type of behavior in Woolwich. Now, what this is called the NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard. So there is a whole set of double standards here, which we should make people aware of.
The notorious al-Qaeda-affiliated al-Nusra Front, among other armed groups in Syria, have a record of atrocities. Those include a recent video published on the internet about the insurgents who cut off a Syrian soldier's organs and eats his heart. Other atrocities include training a 13-year-old child on decapitation and also using child soldiers. Already in its third year, the fate of crisis-hit Syria remains at stake. Many are wondering if there is any prospect for peace amid the continued support of Syrian insurgents by the West and some of its regional allies. Many believe such backing would not only push Syria toward a long and savage war that has already destroyed the country beyond repair, but risk plunging the entire region into chaos.
You're watching The Debate. Let me introduce our guests for you. Political analyst Mr. Sukant Chandon in London with us and Salafist cleric Sheikh Omar Bakri with us live from Tripoli. My first question to Mr. Bakri in Tripoli. Mr. Bakri, is the extremism that we're hearing about in Syria being treated as strongly as it should be treated as a threat to the Syrian people, the region and the world?
I'm sorry, really, to hear that your presentation of the just cause of the Muslims in Syria who are rising against the corrupt regime and the criminals of Bashar al-Assad. You want to introduce them to the people as extremists, as a Takfiris, as a people who are criminals to make the whole West sympathize with you. Nobody's going to believe you. You see, you're talking about a regime who is committing crimes against his own people, killing, murdering. There's nobody there, you see, from Al-Qaeda. And if you want to say now that those uprisings are Al-Qaeda. That means Al-Qaeda, in fact, in your eyes, is the Sunni. Because Al-Qaeda, it's really is an organization working in Afghanistan, but there's no Al-Qaeda in the Sham region. No Al-Qaeda in Syria or Lebanon or Palestine or Jordan. And plus, the Takfiri, it seems to me, you are applied to the anybody who is opposing the Syrian regime and opposing Hezbollah. And that means you try to say that if you are at war with the Takfiri, with the criminal. You are at war with Islam and the Muslims. The Sunnis are the Muslims. And now you want to claim that the Takfiri are killing Sunnis. Because nobody believes you. I'm really surprised to hear that, you see, because the Sunnis are the Muslims. And the regimes of Bashar al-Assad are killing Muslims. Simple like this. Hezbollah making mistake by supporting that regime, that dictatorial regime, and that regime who committing yes. crimes. So I'm really surprised, you know, that we still bring the same stereotype. People of Syria are fighting against dictators. People of Syria are having the right to have their own, to determine what yes. type of systems, what type of life they live. You see, people come from abroad, there, are they going to take a side? So Hezbollah take a side of the regime, and people come
abroad to take a side of the uprisals. In any way, you see, the fight is between oppressors and oppressed. The oppressed people are, you see, the Syrian people, and the oppressors is Bashar al-Assad as the criminals who are killing his own people. So I don't know really yes. Where is the Takfiris and Salafis, and why you bring all these issues to the issue.
Well, let's bring in our guest in London, and I'll come back to you, Mr. Bakri, on that. Before we go to the issue of Hezbollah, etc., Mr. Sukhat Chandan, in response to our guest there who's saying that bringing about the issue of Takfiris or Al-Qaeda here is should not be acceptable because, in his words, Al-Qaeda is not operating in Syria and Takfiris are not carrying out atrocities there. What's your response to that?
Well, in response to Omar in Lebanon, it might be perhaps true on a technicality that Al-Qaeda, as it's manifested in Afghanistan, is not currently operational in Syria or in Jordan. But really, this is just a slight academic real maneuvering by Mr. Omar, because actually it's well established, and it's even been admitted now in the mainstream in the last few and several months, that the death squads fighting on the ground in Syria are actually do represent and do adopt and promote that type of violent Takfiri, violent Salafist, sectarian agenda and ideology, which is similar to Al-Qaeda in the Land of the Two Rivers, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which was pioneered by Zarqawi, which caused somewhat of a split in Al-Qaeda, because bin Laden never espoused violently anti-Shia or anti-Christian within the Muslim lands type of line, whereas that's the phenomenon that really grew and was given space and operation through the yes. invasion of Iraq in 2003. So very much these type of groups are active on the ground in Syria. Mr. Omar is basically one of the tools, fakes and snakes of empire, because why he's going on and on about overthrowing the Syrian state. Did the Syrian state partition the Bilad al-Sham, the region? No. Did the Syrian state occupy Palestine? No. Did the Syrian state invade any other land within the region that's not part of historic Syria? No. So Syria is part of the resistant axis in the region, and everyone knows, while Mr. Omar is going on about Hezbollah's so-called mistakes, well, who is he to talk about mistakes of an actual successful liberation movement which defeated the Zionist white settler state in July 2006? Everyone knows, who's not a total buffoon and idiot, that what NATO and its allies in the region wanted to do to Syria was to create, like they created with Libya, was a launch pad for further destabilization, trauma and division. And the next direct target after Syria, which thank God it seems at the moment that the Syrian Arab Republic will not fall, but the next target for when it would have possibly fallen was Lebanon itself. And if Mr. Omar Bakri wants to see in Tripoli, where he's living, the type of devastation happening in Syria, Libya and Iraq, well, he's a bigger fool than he appears.
Well, we did the see type the Secretary General of Hezbollah,
violent divisions
Mr. Chandon,
and conflict is
referring
not welcome
to
anyone.
As well. I'll just stop there if I may. He was saying, Hassan Nasrallah, that Lebanon sees the threat coming from these groups. They have been saying that once they're done in Syria, they're going to target Lebanon. I'll leave that question to put to Mr. Bakri. But just since we are seeing things happening in Brussels, Mr. Chandon, your opinion on this, because we did hear William Hague, the British Foreign Minister, saying that we are going to discuss sending arms to the militants. At the same time, he said that this is about bringing a political solution to the situation. I was wondering if this could be, this could actually sound a bit contradictory when he says that giving arms to the militants is part of our efforts to bring a political solution. I mean, do you think that we're going to see arms being sent there, or are we all going to see a military escalation of the conflict?
Absolutely, it's contradictory, but this is the type of devilish tricks. Mr. William Hague is in the professional business of trickstering anyone who cares to listen to one nonsensical word that he's spouting. Really, what's going on? And actually, even the Western mainstream press has admitted that the military intelligence services of Britain, France, the United States has been assisting the death squads in Syria for some time now. And only a very naive person would think that they would not have been. But obviously, there are such naive people who exist on this planet, such as evidenced by Mr. Omar Bakri, our other guest on the show. But you know, the foreign policy of the British, like any other imperialist country, is mirrored by their domestic policy. So they actually are using groups like what Mr. Omar Bakri helped to found, formerly known as Mujahideen Islam for UK, and they keep changing their names, of which Mr. Anjem Chowdhury is a supposed so-called leader of as well. They use these groups in Britain and abroad, in Afghanistan, Iraq, wherever these people touch, Chechnya, Syria, Libya, Mali, etc., to create division, to create trauma, to create the type of destabilization, then the NATO powers can go in and pretend to stabilize. And they also promote, and the government allows them to promote, a very skewed and twisted form of Islam. It's actually nothing to do with Islam. But what that does in the minds of the public, it increases Islamophobia and criminalizes all Muslims, because then all Muslims are tarred by this very dirty brush, as represented by these nutters, frankly, or the bonkers brigade, as I call them. So really, the foreign policy and domestic policy is one and the same. It's only the type of smoke and mirrors and false theater which people like Mr. William Hague, which is echoed actually by people like Mr. Omar Bakri, which is the type of rubbish that they're spouting out.
Well, Mr. Sheikh Omar Bakri, who was with us there on the line from Tripoli, I'm afraid we've got a technical problem, so we'll try to bring him back if we can throughout the show. But right now, because of that technical fault, we can't have him. But I'd like to put this question again to Mr. Chandon in London. Now, Mr. Chandon, the thing is, we are hearing some observers suggesting that the reason why we're not seeing a military type of escalation in Syria from the Western countries and from the regional countries who are supporting the militants is that there's a lot of fear about the situation of Israel and how this is going to have an effect on Israel and its security. Do you think that is why we haven't seen up until now a full-scale war on Syria?
Well, just on Mr. Omar Bakri not being on the line, that's a shame, because there's actually been talk in the British press recently of stopping people like Mr. Omar Bakri and his comrade Anjem Chowdhury for going on the media and censoring them. I actually think I actually disagree with that, and I think Press TV are doing the correct thing. It's putting them on the news and on their programming, so their type of nonsense can be exposed. I mean, they do most of the job themselves. They're such a bunch of nutters. But also, it's important to challenge them out in the open and really challenge this type of ideology, because unfortunately, it does have some influence among some of our community and young people. So I think that's very important. But really, coming back to what's going on in Geneva currently, I think they're going to continue the British are going to continue trying to supply the rebels or the death squads with more supplies, because this is all in preparation for the conference that's coming up, which I don't think there's a date yet, but which has been brokered by the United States and Russian administration, and the Russians have ensured that Syria's neighbors, especially Iran, are partaking in that conference. So really, Mr. Hague is trying to strengthen the position of the death squads, who are actually going through some defeats at the moment. And it's very good news in Qusair that the army and reportedly Hezbollah are in control of 80%. And but also I do convey my condolences to all the martyrs in the Syrian conflict, sorry, and particularly Sister Yara Abbas, who has been doing some excellent journalistical work, who unfortunately has been killed by the death squads, I think just yesterday or this morning.
Okay, well, before we move on, let's just bring in a comment that's been posted on our Facebook page by one of our viewers about the role that especially Israel is also playing here. We'll take a look at that comment and I'll be back with the rest of the discussion.
Al-Qaeda, Zionists and the Western world are dreaming different dreams, but sometimes sleep in the same tent.
Okay, now, Mr. Chandon, we are hearing that Israel is reportedly cooperating with the militants in the Golan Heights. And it's clear, according to Tel Aviv itself, that it is on the side of the militants fighting Bashar al-Assad. But does this mean that the extremist groups, the militants, and even the regional countries like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE, are willing to cooperate with Israel if it means that it's against Bashar al-Assad?
Absolutely, sister. And just to go back to your previous question as well, which ties into your question now, I don't think these death squads pose any real strategic threat to the Zionist white settler state whatsoever. If they did, frankly, they would not have been promoted and given weapons and given this massive media campaign backing that they have by the leading NATO powers. And also, it's been well established time after time after time that senior members of the Zionist state are actually in sympathy with the death squads, and the death squads leadership itself has also assured that the Zionist white settler state is not in any type of jeopardy or danger whatsoever. But also, that aside, let's just look at the basic geopolitics of the region. Hassan Nasrallah has made it clear that without the support of the Syrian Ba'athist government, that the victory in July 2006 would not have been possible against the white settler state, which Hezbollah achieved. Yes. So really, this operation against Syria is about smashing any obstacle to the total hegemony of Zionism imperialism in the region,
yes,
but specifically to get back and to conduct revenge against that historic defeat. Because remember, no Arab cause or struggle had really struck a strategic defeat against the white settler Zionist state until the resistance movement in Lebanon, Hezbollah, expelled them in 2000, that's the Israeli occupation, and then fought them to a standstill, which was a de facto victory in July 2006. This is all very clear, and this is actually quite ABC.
Okay, well, before I ask this question about Hezbollah, I'd just like to remind our viewers that Sheikh Omar Bakri, our other guest in Tripoli, he was with us at the beginning of the show. Apparently, he's not picking his phone. We're trying to get him on the show, but up until now, we've not been successful. But, Mr. Chandon, you refer there to the issue of Hezbollah. There has been a lot of talk now about how Hezbollah is active, is present right now, fighting alongside Syrian forces, for instance, in Qusair against the militants. Now, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, he himself said that we are helping the militants because we've heard the militants say, and they have said it clearly, that once we topple President Assad, we're going to come and target Lebanon. But does that justify Hezbollah's presence in Syria?
I think actually Hezbollah and Sheikh Nasrallah has actually bent over backwards to not involve themselves in the conflict in Syria. And even the latest speech of Nasrallah, he said, this is nearly a direct quote, he says, "Let's not bring the conflict in Syria into Lebanon. If people want to take sides in the conflict in Syria, well then go fight in Syria and leave Lebanon out of it." Now, the strategy obviously was like they conducted regime change against Libya, and then we all know how many ton loads of weaponry and supplies the death squads in Libya, obviously facilitated by the leading NATO powers, were sending over to Tripoli in North Lebanon, so to go to the death squads in Lebanon, in Syria, sorry. Luckily, the Lebanese army had foiled that particular large shipment. Similarly, like with Syria, they wanted to overthrow or at least traumatize and destabilize Syria to such an extent that they can then use Syria as a recruiting ground for these crazy Takfiri death squads, to gather them in Syria, to train them, and then to launch them against other unfriendly or other governments and states in the region which are obstacles to Zionism and imperialism, to total hegemony, being actually the government of Iraq currently, and Lebanese Hezbollah. So really, but to directly answer your question, it was actually, it was the residents of villages along the Syrian-Lebanese border which were demanding that Hezbollah come to protect them that actually led to Hezbollah entering on a very limited scale the conflict in Syria. But actually, if you know the death squads can recruit people from all around the world and NATO can facilitate that, remember, you know, if you want to go fight in Libya beforehand or Syria now, you will not be criminalized, you will not be arrested. There will be no stories that this is something bad happening in the Western press. Actually, this is a freedom struggle for the leading NATO countries. So if the death squads can recruit internationally, well, why can't a component part of historic Syria, that's the resistance movement in Lebanon, why cannot they go there and defend according to the demands of their supporters there? I think that's totally right and just.
Okay, now when we are speaking about what can end this situation, of course, a lot of people are speaking about the political solution, a peaceful way out of this, but there seems to be an effort to create a balance of force, if I may say, between the two sides before a political solution can be reached. Now, how can that balance be achieved, in your opinion, Mr. Chandon? I mean, we've been hearing a lot about Bashar Assad stepping down as one condition that can help bring about the political process. And also William Hague kind of suggesting in his recent remarks that arming the insurgents and at the same time doing the negotiations is going to bring about that balance. Now, what's your idea?
Syria is a sovereign state of the global south. So whose business is it other than the Syrians to determine their leadership or the nature of their government, etc.? It's no one's business, actually, let alone those whose interest is to visit upon Syria what they visited on countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. And really, we have to defend the principle of sovereignty and independence. As Ho Chi Minh said, there's nothing more precious than independence and freedom. If we lose this principle or we compromise on this principle, we can kiss the rights of independence and sovereignty goodbye to all the countries of the global south. So really, this is a red line that our side of the global south, particularly the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, even India, China,
so Mr. Chandon, sorry for jumping in here, because
drawn.
We are short of time. What do you think, then, is the main intention right now of particularly Britain, France and the US, who are calling for these arms? What are they trying to do with the situation right now in Syria?
Well, the modus operandi of the British, French and the United States has been, and it continues to be, and it always will be until this the whole nature of this system is put into history and into the museum where it belongs. It's always been to use whatever tactics they can to achieve their strategic goals. So they will never stop in trying to conduct regime change against Syria. That's a given, and that's a constant that we must remain vigilant to. But they have to also recognize the reality on the ground, which is that their operation against Syria has not worked hitherto. So there has to be some level of cooperation to a small degree with the Russians and others to pretend like they're interested in a settlement to Syria, which they're not.
Okay, I'm afraid we've run out of time. A big thank you there to political analyst Mr. Sukant Chandon with us live from London. I do apologise again because we lost our guest in Tripoli, Sheikh Omar Bakri, Salafist cleric. We did try to contact him again, but apparently and unfortunately he wasn't answering. So a big thank you again to our guests in London and Tripoli. That's all for this edition of The Debate from me, Homa Lesgi. It's goodbye.